This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we have stories about food in large quantities. From bulk buying groups and reasons for stocking up, to creative solutions for handling excess waste.
We have someone picking up our corks from the wine bottles, and they repurpose them to make buoys for boats and like shoes and all these different things.
Yeah, because of the COVID, everybody isolate at home. But to see the people face to face is still exciting. So we kind of treat it like a chance to say hello to the people and to the friend.
Listen to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum, and I love to talk with people about what they do and how it influences their personal food stories. This is a show about people, life, and food. If you're just tuning in for the first time, all the previous episodes can be found in the archives at heritageradionetwork.org. I'm thankful for listeners like you, and I'd love it if you'd leave me a review wherever you find this podcast. For those of you with kids at home, I've been working on a new podcast here at Heritage Radio Network. Along with my co-host, Hannah Forden, who's the program manager at HRN, we've created Time for Lunch, a fun food-focused show for kids. We're about to wrap up our second season, so you've got more than 20 episodes to catch up on, and we'd love it if you'd check it out wherever you get your podcasts. I'd also like to remind listeners that Heritage Radio is a nonprofit, and we need your help to stay on the air. If you enjoy this show and listen to the other great podcasts we produce every week, please find your way to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to make your gift. Today's theme, Jewish Food Society. I grew up Jewish, and there are a lot of dishes that I think of as Jewish. They're often the same ones as my peers, brisket, kugel, bagel with lox, matzo ball soup. It's only been in recent years that I've discovered there's a huge diaspora of foods all over the world that are considered Jewish in various communities that aren't the same as my New York upbringing. I've recently been thinking about my Jewish heritage and the foods therein, so it was fitting that last week I had a chance to chat with Amanda Dell. She's the program director at the Jewish Food Society. Their goal is to preserve beloved Jewish foods and to celebrate new ones. And there are a plethora of those to be shared and discovered. Amanda, thank you so much for taking time out to talk with me for Feast Your Ears today. Can you start by just introducing yourself and tell me a little bit about what you do?
Sure thing, Harry. Thanks for having me. I love that we get to chat here. My name is Amanda Dell. I'm a native New Yorker, and I am the program director for a nonprofit organization called Jewish Food Society. And our mission is to preserve, celebrate, and revitalize Jewish culinary heritage from all around the world.
Awesome. And I feel like we're definitely, I mean, I grew up in New York also, and I grew up Jewish. I had a bar mitzvah. My daughter is currently studying. She decided she wanted to have a bat mitzvah, even though I'm a very bad kind of lapsed Jew, I feel like. So there's been a lot of talk about Jewish culture and Jewish food in our household in the past couple of years. And one of the things that I always think is so interesting about it, and especially on the, you know, if people go and take a look at jewishfoodsociety.org, the posts on there, I feel like, cover such a huge width and breadth of food and you know, things that maybe people do consider Jewish or like know of as Jewish kinds of foods, but a lot that I don't think people would consider Jewish if you said, hey, name your top 10 Jewish foods.
Yeah. Well, you know, as a New Yorker who grew up Jewish, but very secular to, you know, to the product of two parents who are not religious, definitely like my connection to the cultural Judaism has always been there. Definitely grew up eating a lot of foods, but, you know, working for Jewish Food Society has been a huge learning experience for me. And thank you so much for, you know, taking a look at our archive. Basically, our work is divided in two areas. We're building this comprehensive archive of family recipes, and we also write a narrative essay about each family's history and the recipe roots. And then we also do, you know, programming to bring that archive to life. But yes, like working at Jewish Food Society and learning just about the huge Jewish diaspora that is out there and expanding my own understanding of, you know, what quote unquote Jewish food is, what it was, what it can be. Again, I've learned a tremendous amount, and I'm grateful for that. But yes, we really concentrate on showing, you know, a diverse and global perspective. Yeah. Of Jewish food.
Yeah, it sounds like your upbringing was very similar to mine. I mean, while I had a bar mitzvah, like, you know, we didn't celebrate Shabbat every Friday night. We did right. once in a while, and you know, but the food was always something that I felt like was a huge connection, because it was not only a connection to Judaism, right? In a way, I mean, we would have Passover, and so there are lots of food things that are involved in that specific meal and other things. But it was also a connection to family, because the recipes were passed down. I mean, you know, there was grandma's brisket recipe, and, you know, everybody knew that my, you know, who in the family made floaters and who made sinkers and, you know. but so there was this real connection to the food that I think was conflated is the wrong word, but was really a part of the religion or the religious experience of growing up Jewish.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think I had an experience that wasn't exactly unique, although everyone thinks that their family is always like the strangest or the outlier. But,
sure.
You know, my maternal grandmother unfortunately passed away when I was very young, but my dad's mother was like a huge part of our life. She was actually born in the US. Her family came from Russia, but she was born in 1917 in New York. So, you know, I'm a third generation official. Just but you know, she was a woman that, you know, she started out in Far Rockaway, then she moved to Bensonhurst. Then, you know, her goal was like always kind of inching closer to living in Manhattan and kind of living that lifestyle. And she kind of rejected cooking, essentially, as she got older. She loved food and she loved restaurants, and she still loved cooking certain things. But like, to her, making it was kind of like, you know, ordering a huge spread from like Second Avenue Deli when we would get together, or, you know, Russ and Daughters, or going out to eat. So I think that, you know, when we study people's families, we see this narrative, you know, frequently. Sometimes when people's families have immigrated to the US, they really hold on to religious aspects, you know, the cultural aspects of cooking, of passing down these recipes. And some people's families, you know, a little bit similar to my own, kind of really wanted to assimilate to American culture and had a different idea of what they considered, you know, making it.
Yeah.
And, you know, for my grandmother, it was really about getting to move to Manhattan and, you know, going to the theater and, you know, using public, you know, not having a car, using public transportation. But whenever we gathered as a family, it was always about food, really.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, in the past, I don't know, I mean, past 10 years or so, you know, food and cooking have become, I think, a lot more of a hot topic and people were doing it more. And then I think once March came around and people were stuck at home, I mean, cooking kind of, you know, exploded. How has, you know, what have you seen at the Jewish Food Society as far as people's interest in the recipe side or the cooking side of things since March?
Well, I think your observations are very astute. Many people had to cook, some of them for the first time. what we learned and then kind of what we activated on was this idea that actually what people were craving was nostalgia and was more more simple recipes that they felt weren't, you know, intimidating, and with everything else going on that they felt like they could handle. So actually we reached out to our community to send us some videos of what we lovingly refer to as their tradish, like a traditional dish, but that was more simple. So like, even for me, I made something, which is actually one of the things that I remember my grandmother cooking, which is basically just like potatoes and onions, like with paprika. And shared videos from all around the world of people making kind of their version of comfort food that they wanted to lean back into. I think that what we the feedback that we received is that it wasn't actually the time that people, you know, cracked open that 300 page cookbook that they had their eye on in their house. It was about going back to the recipes that they know and love and grew up with and that were simple and brought them to that nostalgia.
Right. And I think that then the idea that where those are being shared with other people, I mean, I'm looking right now at your homepage and I'm looking at things and saying, okay, you know, in July, there was a post about how one cook in Switzerland is preserving the flavors of India's Baghdadi Jews.
That was fascinating.
And I mean, like, there's a lot in there, and there's a lot in that title, you know.
Yeah.
But it also is this thing where I feel like, you know, myself included, people are interested in cooking. And so, like, cooking these recipes, there is a connection somehow, right, to kind of like the greater Jewish diaspora. But it also, to me, represents this opportunity for these recipes to become part of somebody else's, like, food canon. You know, like, when I often think about food in terms of, like, what are the recipes that my mom, you know, that my mom cooked or my dad cooked or that we cooked a lot growing up? And what are my kids going to remember as the things that we cook a lot? And it's not just about this, like, exploration of, like, oh, we tried this recipe once. Well, sure, you could do that 1,000 times. But it's really like, oh, I remember my mom's making ossobuco, and I remember my grandma's brisket. And I, you know, all of these things that I still sometimes make. And now I've incorporated new things into that. And this is a really neat way that the Jewish Food Society is sort of sharing those. And it's interesting to think about, you know, are some of these recipes going to be something that someone now makes every once a month or something, and then their children remember those as their family recipes.
That's a beautiful concept, and definitely speaks to, you know, the mission of the organization. But yeah, like, we, in our Instagram stories, like in our highlights, we saved some of the more, like, simple recipes and what people from our community wanted to share as, like, their kind of comfort foods. Like, my friend Marissa Lippert, who's an amazing chef and had a cafe in the West Village called Nourish, like, she shared her Aunt Bibi's macarons. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like her go-to, you know, dish. It only has a few ingredients, and that's like kind of what she makes to want to be close, you know, to her grandmother. And, you know, one of the other dishes that came up during this, like, tradition period was schnitzel. I don't know if that's something you ever make.
No.
But it's funny. I grew up, like, both my parents cooked when I was growing up. My dad, as we got older, like, started to do more of the cooking. It's something that he loves. And one thing I always remember growing up with, like, we would call it chicken cutlet. Like, and it would be something that he would make, like, once a week. And after Rachel Simons, who's the owner of this amazing tahini and halva company, Seed and Mill, her tradition was schnitzel.
Huh.
And I was like, wait a minute. I never called it that growing up, but that was the thing that's, like, obviously where it came from. You know, first, I don't know where the name got changed. So yeah, it was really interesting to kind of speak to people and get their submissions about what felt comforting to them
right
during this pandemic that was also relatively simple. We hope that people cook from our archive often, and we definitely hope that they, you know, will pass it along and make it part of their repertoire as well.
Are there any recipes that that you now have sort of incorporated into your personal canon?
Let me think. Okay. Here's one thing that we may have it as a recipe to, like, accompany a few other recipes, but one piece of knowledge that I learned from the founder and executive director of Jewish Food Society, Nama Shafi, who's the visionary behind the organization. Also pre-pandemic, we traveled to Israel, which was, you know, I hadn't been since I was a teenager, and it was, you know, an incredible trip. And I learned a good technique. I will say, I'm going to choose my words very carefully. I learned a good technique for making a chopped salad. And I understood that, like, the chopped salad with like cucumber, tomato, onion, a little lemon, salt and pepper, some nice olive oil. Like that is something that I think when I grew up or when I'm used to eating it, it was kind of like something that was always in like a deli case or hanging around.
Right.
And what I learned is that you must make that right before you're going to eat it. Like you cannot pre-chop, like you, it's a dish that's meant to be eaten like a la minute. And that kind of changed my perspective of it after I had like the freshly chopped vegetables and like, you really just want to eat it right before you are going to serve it. And the other thing that I love to make, which again is, you know, maybe not something that you would typically think of as Jewish food, which is exciting to me, is we have a woman who we have a few of her recipes. She's an incredible cook. Her name is Renat Sadok, and she's part of her heritage is Moroccan. She lives in Israel, and she makes like a crudo of different fish with like kind of a, like a little bit of a spice, like pepper Moroccan inspiration. And in the summer, I made a lot of crudo.
Nice. Yeah.
Oh, it's too yeah. hot. You did. You did as well.
Yeah. Yeah, we did too.
I don't know if making crudo, I guess that you can call it that, but I love that. So
let's talk about Schmaltzy.
Let's do it.
So Schmaltzy is the podcast of yes. the Jewish Food Society. I've been listening to some episodes. It's really fun.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
So how did it come? How did that come about as a project? Yeah.
So one of our live events, one of our signature events that we did in real life when we could was of the same name. It was called Schmaltzy. It was a storytelling and tasting event. We've held them in New York, in Tel Aviv, outside of San Francisco, in Silicon Valley. The idea behind the event is like five stories, five dishes. So basically we ask five members of our community to tell a really personal story that's in some way related to a food. So it's kind of like the moth.
Yep.
But with like knishes or, you know, or pastrami. So the stories, you know, we work really hard at crafting with the storyteller, and they're, you know, about themes that are universal: love, life, loss, identity, challenges. But food is, you know, this food is somewhat a part of the story and it plays a role in the story. So we presented these programs, you know, live in different theaters and different venues. And then afterwards, everyone would get to taste the foods that were in the stories.
Right.
So, you know, we had these incredible stories that only, you know, 200 or 300 or 400 people that were in the room are able to hear at a live event. So the podcast came about by saying, like, how can we share these incredible stories and storytelling with a bigger audience? And, you know, how can we, how can we just, I guess we wanted a way to connect with people when we couldn't and have, you know, a virtual community and have people experience something together, even though that we're apart.
Right. Yeah.
We dove into the live stories from the stage, and we just debuted this fall in September with a Rosh Hashanah episode from New York City-based pastry chef Zoe Kanaan.
Yep.
That she told live from the stage a few years ago. And yeah, we have an episode with Adam Richman. We had the previous one was with the one that was most recently released was with Jake Dell. We discovered we don't know why we have the same last name, but we're not related. he's the fifth generation owner of Katz's Deli.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm excited to listen to
that
one.
Yeah, it's we really got into it. And it was his story. I won't give too much away, but his story is about how he made the decision to enter the family business. And it wasn't what he had planned for his entire life. I'll say that. Yeah, and we're just, we're excited. We have a great lineup, coming up for the rest of the season. And again, we're really excited to celebrate these stories that the storytellers have put so much time and energy, into creating. And again, our hope is that the themes are universal for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I'm one of the reasons I'm excited to listen to the episode about Katz's is that in my family, Katz's plays a big role in that my father brought my mother a sandwich from Katz's right after I was born in the hospital.
Really?
And also, and I was born in Mount Sinai.
Okay.
And so my dad brought my mom a pastrami sandwich from Katz's. And then when my brother was born, he was actually born in Westchester County in Mount Kisco. But the day after he was born, my father drove to Katz's and got a sandwich to bring to my mom in the hospital. And then when each of my children were born, I brought Taylor a Katz's sandwich in the hospital.
Oh my God, that's such an incredible memory.
Yeah, so we have this family tradition of you always bring a Katz's sandwich to the new mom in the hospital. Wow.
But that's kind of the power of food that I think is so incredible in a way, because your parents were celebrating your birth, which is a really big deal, and they had a new baby, but one thing that they remembered forever is that your dad brought your mom this sandwich.
Yep.
When there was so much else going on, so many other things that could have been remembered in a specific way, but that really stuck.
Yep.
Oh my totally. God, I need to tell. I gotta tell that to Jake.
And then you guys have a virtual event coming up on October 20th.
Yes. So we're still clearly in this pandemic. And, wanted to find a way to bring some new stories to the stage. And we have an incredible lineup. We have Andrew Zimmern talking about his grandmother and salmon.
Nice.
We have Jake Cohen. He's a cookbook author and recipe developer. I don't know if you know him at all. Mm-hmm. He's a super fun guy. He's going to talk about a multicultural brisket that he made. we have the designer, Susan Korn, known as Susan Alexandra, talking about her grandmother and about a dish of grapefruit. We have BJ Barhani, who's the owner of Sion Cafe, an Ethiopian a restaurant in Harlem, talking about dabo, which is a traditional Ethiopian bread. And we have the legend Joan Nathan.
The queen of Jewish baking.
Exactly. So, it's giving us an opportunity to do something that's, really fun and kind of create more, really create a show that we hope is dynamic and gets, people. We're going to share stories, but we're also going to, have as much fun as we can have through a video screen.
Yeah.
Through, a computer, or if you're going to broadcast on your TV.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
One of the things that I wanted to bring up in talking about Jewish food is, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, appropriation in food and like, is it okay for, you know, white Americans to have taco restaurants and that sort of thing, I feel like, in the food world, and people are starting to discuss these issues. Growing up in New York and being Jewish and eating Jewish foods, I have this long-running kind of like joke theory with a friend of mine who did not grow up Jewish but grew up in Brooklyn that like we're all kind of Jewish when you grow up in New York. Right? Because like he knows what a bagel with a schmear is, and he knows what babka is, and he knows what brisket and pastrami are. And like they're a big part of his food history as well, even though he didn't grow up and have a bar mitzvah.
Right. Well, I think New York, I mean, I love this joke theory, but you know, as the, I mean, I'm such a proud New Yorker and such a part of my identity. And I think that the point that you raise is very interesting, because I think that, you know, there's also many other foods that are associated with New York that are not even, you know, quote unquote American.
Yeah.
Like a lot of times people think of like a hot dog. Well, you know, that at some point came from Germany.
Yep.
But that's like the most New York thing that pizza.
Right, pizza.
And it's funny that you know, bring up bagel, like it when I mean I went to college in the Northeast, so I didn't get too far away, but when I've traveled to other places or other, you know, parts of the country, and people are not familiar with eating like a bagel and smoked fish or herring or some of these other things, and they don't think it's appetizing, speaking of appetizing,
right?
Like they don't, you know, and to me, you know, growing up eating that so much, you're just like, wait, Kate, this is like a part of my life. Like everyone loves like a bagel and lox. It's like a delicacy. It's like expensive. It's,
yeah,
you know, and then when you kind of travel outside of the New York bubble a little bit, you realize like, in a way this is like a little bit of a hard sell if you haven't grown up eating it. It's like a cold fish. You're like putting cream, like with cream cheese, and you put onion on, like raw onion on
capers,
it, and it's like the most, it's like one of my foods that I would like eat on my deathbed, but it's like, I, you know, I do think that sometimes these foods exist, you know, in the New York bubble, but also to your point, many foods that are associated with New York are not even Jewish. I mean, are not even American.
No, you know? Totally. I mean, when I was a kid, in fact, I mean, just to make a quick pitch to you, this might be a fun story for Schmaltzy, for your podcast.
You're already on my list. Don't worry.
My family, we had good friends, and the father was a minister at a church in Iowa, in very rural Iowa. They had moved there from Massachusetts. And my parents and this family figured out while drinking together one summer that the following year, the first night of Passover, was also Good Friday. And so we, as a family of New York Jews, flew to Iowa and held a Seder at their church for Good Friday, for the first night of Passover.
Okay, Harry, you have to tell this story.
And one of the mistakes that we made was assuming that we'd be able to get things like matzah at a supermarket, not in a metropolitan area. And so we flew to Iowa and we got off the plane and we went to a supermarket and there was no matzah. And so my father had to call a friend in New York and have him FedEx a giant box of matzah so that we would have enough matzah for the Seder.
Wow. And how did some of the dishes go over at the Seder?
They went over very well. My mother reported that all of the older people in the congregation all knew about manischewitz, and manischewitz was the only thing that we were able to get in Iowa everything else we had to ship in. But there was plenty of Manischewitz. And then there was also this weird thing that happened in the, because they all cooked together, you know, made the soup together. And of course, everybody was like, oh, this is just, you know, the matzo ball soup. This is just like my chicken soup. And, you know, this is like my grandmother's dumplings that go in it, kind of. And, you know, so there was this like interesting food connection between people who didn't have the same background. But then there were one or two, and my mother sadly is no longer alive to really tell the story, but, you know, this is relayed from her to me. There were a couple of women who kind of came over to her and in whispered voices said, well, you know, my grandmother was actually Jewish.
Wow. Huh.
Very interesting thing and way that these things kind of like, you know, travel around and spread out or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, at the risk of, you know, repeating something that many people have said before me, like, you know, food does have a way to, you know, for people to realize that, you know, we're more alike than we are different.
Yeah.
And I think it gives people an opportunity to speak more freely around the table.
For sure. So, you know, now that we're in coronavirus times, I mean, one of yeah. my, and I'm sure your, you know, sort of great loves in the world is traveling and eating. Mm-hmm. Where are you excited to go once it's safe?
Such a good question. Okay. So, the first place that I would go back to would be Mexico.
Hmm.
I traveled there a few times over the past few years, to Mexico City and to Oaxaca. There's a few other areas of Mexico on my list, like Merida, going to more of like the beach area of Oaxaca. But really, I fell in love with Mexico City, and I would go back there like tomorrow.
I've heard it's so wonderful. I've never been.
Yeah, it really struck me in so many ways, like the you know, the art, the creativity, obviously the food, but there's really something. I don't know if this will sound strange, but I hope not. It's hugely complimentary. There's something like very chic about it, in a very understated way. Like when you go to a corner, you know, on this side of this, you know, street taco stand, which is absolutely delicious, by the way, like you kind of like sit at this little stool that they give you, and they bring you out like a rail of like 10 different salsas, and they just set you up to have like the best experience from the highest, you know, most highest level dining experience, fanciest, like all the way down to like food that you get on the street. So, and I was really struck by that. I loved it.
That's awesome. I want to
move there.
Sounds great. You know, you could have you know, it seems to me that there's got to be enough of a Jewish presence there that you could do that, you know, Jewish Food Society on Espanol.
See, we're working on it.
Awesome. I want to jump back to, I guess, before your time at the Jewish Food Society to talk a little bit about the Food Book Fair.
Certainly. We go way back.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the Food Book Fair. I mean, the Food Book Fair, you know, has been supporting cookbooks and you know, and authors and food related books now for 8 years. Is that right?
Oh my gosh, something like that. Yes. It really actually brings me back to thinking about Williamsburg in those old days, in the good old days.
Yeah.
We refer to Food Book Fair as, you know, a festival of writing about eating. You know, there was kind of several signature events that, you know, we would do, which were, you know, panels all about anything that was food media related, you know, dinners, and our event that I think was a tremendous amount of fun and also important was called Foodiaticals.
So fun,
which is, you know, was kind of an expo of different food publications. independent food publication. So we would say not the glossies. And so much has changed, you know, so much has changed even talking about that. And and then we were also really honored to do book signings at the Union Square Green Market, where we would bring authors to sign their books in the heart of one of my favorite places in the entire city, surrounded by produce and makers. And they would have a chance to, you know, meet their readers and their fans. And so, yeah, I mean, we're thinking about the next phase. So much of what we did was about, you know, in-person interaction.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of joy that it brings me that, you know, a lot of books are getting made during this time. And, you know, one of the things that we would talk about at Food Book Fair a lot, and I think about as I actually pared down my cookbook collection and my food book collection over Corona times, if you can believe it, and gave some of my books to new homes.
Yep.
I had a lot. Is that, you know, the books that I really love most are sometimes the ones that I never even cook out of. I just bring it into my bed with me and get under the covers and get inspired.
Right.
And, you know, the other thing that I learned that I loved learning about was also this, you know, even a genre that I think was gaining traction and now has exploded, which is really, you know, memoirs.
Yeah.
About food and autobiographical memoirs, which I love reading. So, we're figuring out, you know, the next phase. And also, I think as you mentioned, yeah, we're podcast buddies because we also had a podcast at Heritage.
Yeah, and all of that is all still there and still just as relevant. So if anybody wants to go and find that,
It's called Recommended Readings.
Yeah. And you can find it at heritageradionetwork.org.
Yeah, we loved our home at Heritage. So thank you, Heritage.
Yeah. So before we wrap up, I understand you have a little story that involves Fire Island and some pasta.
Man, this is like my potential schmaltzy story, although it doesn't have to do with Jewish food.
You can give us the short version so people will still listen to the schmaltzy version.
Basically, I love Fire Island. It's one of my favorite places to go in the world. I got the chance to go there a bunch this summer. And I had been in various different, they call them share houses, like, you know, kind of communal houses that are rented to, you know, to groups and people can come on different weekends. And I've done that in a variety of ways, but I was at a house with some friends and all food people, by the way. So the pressure was high and most of the people in the house went somewhere else, like to have some drinks or to watch the sunset or something, but the dinner was on me. And I popped open the cupboard and all I saw was, like, you know, when you look at your box of pasta and it has like half of a serving in it and you're like, oh. And so all I did was, like, I opened our cupboard and, like, it was like five different kinds of pasta, all with a little in each box. And I was cooking for like 8 or 10 people. And I was like, oh my God, if there's one thing I know about cooking pasta, like, the time is the crucial part. Like, I can't have things cooking at different times. The one person was like Italian that I was cooking for. I was like, oh my gosh, this is a disaster. What am I going to do? And I don't know if you've been to Fire Island, but there's like limited stores and limited resources. And this was already like 8 o'clock and the very few, like, the two stores that were relatively near us were already closed. So I was like, oh, you know what, I'll just bike over to my friend's house that I've stayed at before. And this is like a huge share house. They always have like 25 people on the weekends, pre-pandemic, of course. And so I roll up to the, and I was like, I'll just borrow some pasta from them. They're always stocked. Like, it won't be a big deal.
Right.
So I roll up there and the house, it's like 8 o'clock. The house is totally dark. Like, and it's a Saturday night or something like that in the middle of the summer. And I'm like, okay, this is really weird. Like, I've never once seen this house with not one person in it. But it's Fire Island and the doors are always open. to every single house. So I didn't even turn on the lights. And I just went into this house and I stole a couple boxes of pasta and ran to my bike and ran back. And to this day, they don't know that I took this pasta. But when I did see them around, I was like, hey, like, what happened? Like, I've never seen the house empty on a Saturday night, like in the middle of summer. They're like, oh yeah, we just took the water taxi to the Pines and we all had dinner. And I was like, oh my God, okay. So that was like, I think part of my personality is that intersect, you know, which is that I knew I couldn't serve a subpar pasta.
Right.
So I and had to figure out.
And you knew that these folks would not miss their pasta.
They wouldn't miss. Yeah, because the way that they stocked the house, I knew they wouldn't miss it.
Right.
So that's the story. It will probably, although I just mentioned it on the side of it, it might go to the grave with me. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, we'll all take it to the grave with us. How about that?
Perfect.
Well, thank you so much, Amanda. It's been great to catch up. Do you have any other events or things on the horizon that you want to make sure people know about?
We have, as you graciously mentioned, our virtual schmaltzy, and we have tickets start at just $18. So we really hope everyone that can come and hear some great stories and hear them from the comfort of their own home. And you can find info on that at jewishfoodsociety.org or our Instagram, which is at Jewish Food Society. And, when your listeners exhaust listening to all of your amazing episodes, they can listen to Schmaltzy.
Or intersperse them. It's fine.
Okay, great. And you can find that on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. So, we really hope you give it a listen. And if you have any, thoughts about the podcast, you can always reach out at hi@jewishfoodsociety.org.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Harry. So good to catch up.
Thanks for listening to Feast Your Ears today. You can check out jewishfoodsociety.org for more information about their recipes and their work, and check out their podcast, Schmaltzy, hosted by Amanda Dell. Sign up for their virtual Schmaltzy event, which is coming up on October 20th. You can follow Amanda and the Jewish Food Society at Jewish Food Society and at Amanda_Dell. You can find Feast Your Ears, as well as lots of other great shows, at heritageradionetwork.org on iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please reach out if you have any questions. You can reach me via email, harry@thebrooklynkitchen.com, and you can follow me on Instagram, @thefoodballer. Talk to you next week. Feast Your Ears is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter, @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.